Jeff Danziger spends his time finding the humor in news stories like the nomination of Clarence Thomas to the Supreme Court, conflicts over Israeli loan guarantees, and unemployment in America. Danziger is a political cartoonist with the Christian Science Monitor. His cartoons are syndicated by the Los Angeles Times. Apparently, Danziger is one of those cartoonists who's had a novel in progress stashed in his drawer for many years, but unlike many such would-be novelists, he's finished his. It's called Rising Like the Tucson, and it's based on his tour of duty in Vietnam. From 1970 to 71, he was an intelligence officer with the 1st Air Cavalry Division. His novel is about the absurd aspects of the war. The main character is an intelligence officer who gets letters from his dad suggesting he invest in real estate in Vietnam because, after all, there's no opportunity like being in a war zone after the war is won.
After Richard Nixon was elected and announced that there were going to be, he had a secret plan to end the war. In Paris, the peace talks were going on. And it looked like the war was going to come to an end similar to what was going on and what had happened in Korea. And this main character's father is a developer in Connecticut, and he wants to have his son get into on the ground floor to buy land in Vietnam while the prices are low, because after the settlement, the prices are going to go through the roof. And it was true that in Vietnam at that time, in fact, companies were setting up shop. Most of the companies were construction companies, but the Japanese were building factories along the main route from Benoit to Saigon. People were buying land. The French were still there. And one of the telling things when you got off the plane, if you were in the army and you got off the plane at Tansanut Air Base, when you first arrived in the country, the first sign you saw was a huge billboard that said, "You have a friend at the Chase Manhattan."
This was. Do you want to read one of the father's letters to the son?
All right, he writes, "Remember, son, there is no time in history like the time right after a war when you're on the winning side. It's the time when the victors make the laws and take what they like. What fools we were in Japan. Why did we not just annex the whole damn country? Why didn't we treat them like the little rats they were? We would now own the entire island of Japan, an entire colony of hardworking little Japs all making things for us. American boys died in the Pacific so their sons could pay money for Japanese cars. I tell you, son, when I think of it, it makes me so damn mad. We won the war. The entire place should have belonged to us."
The humor in your novel could be described as black humor. Was your sense of humor shaped at all by the war?
I think it was certainly shaped by novels like Catch-22, which is the classic of the Second World War. And that in the middle of the violent desperation of war, there is a great deal of farce going on. And in some cases, the worse things get, the more you need to look around for something to balance it.
Give me a sense of something that happened to you in real life during the war that was absolutely farcical.
You know, most of the things which happened in this book, which the incidents in the book actually did happen, there's the part where the infantry platoons, because there's the accusation that they're faking the numbers of North Vietnamese that they've killed, are given Polaroid cameras to take a picture of each dead North Vietnamese. Well, that's in the book as an incident, but it actually did happen. And since there wasn't any limit on the amount of Polaroid film, some of the platoon leaders would take 3, 4, and 5 pictures of a dead North Vietnamese soldier. And then when they got back to the base or to the officers' club, they would trade them back and forth like
baseball cards.
Baseball cards, you know. And this actually did happen. I witnessed it myself.
Now, how did you were in the war in 70, 71, is that right?
Yeah.
How did you get into cartooning after that?
I moved back. I was in Vermont, and I just was teaching school, and I began sending drawings into a paper in Montpelier, Vermont, the Times Argus, and they started printing them and paying me a dollar a piece.
Hey.
I knew this
Hope
was,
you didn't spend it all in one place.
I knew this was what I wanted to do.
Get rich quick scheme. You cartoon now for the Christian Science Monitor. Are there any restrictions against doing cartoons about medical issues?
No, the monitor is owned by the Christian Science Church, but it remains fairly secular in its editorial views, and they comment on just about anything that comes along that's a legitimate news issue.
You had in a cartoon recently about Shamir Bush and the loan guarantees.
Mm-hmm.
And this is probably a very controversial cartoon for you. Would you describe it and tell us the response that you got?
Well, this was Shamir with a machine gun trying to get approval for the loan guarantees. And the ammunition for the machine gun, which he's holding on Baker and Bush, is a box of shells called Influence in Congress. And I think it occurred to a lot of people that the way the there was almost an implied threat that Israel had sufficient friends in Congress to get the loan guarantee, whether or not George Bush was in favor of it. That's what that was trying to show.
The response you got?
Well, the response was vociferous, but people who do call up. I talk with them if they want to talk to me on the phone. They go ahead and do it, and usually the result is that we agree to disagree, and I respect their point of view. And certainly, in some cases, if I'm wrong, I just apologize.
Do you ever do a change of heart cartoon or a fairness cartoon if you feel that you've represented one side and people are demanding that you represent the other? Or is cartooning just not objective and that's the breaks?
Well, the purpose of the cartoon is to get some
point of view.
Modicum of humor, that's uh-huh. right, and usually to do it through humor. It's an unfair form of criticism because if you don't like what someone did in a cartoon, it's not like a column. You can't sit down and refute it point by point. It's simply either ridicule or laughter. And so if someone has a very good point about something, I normally just either apologize or try to do something in mitigation if I think I'm wrong.
How does your drawing style in your cartoons compare to the kind of style that you had when you were studying art in college?
Well, I have to tell you, I never did.
Oh,
I never
did
study art. No, I have taken courses at in anatomy. The two big problems in cartooning are that when you sit down to do an editorial cartoon, and there is nothing in front of you to draw. You may have a photograph of Bush or Baker or Shamir or something to use as a caricature, but the remainder of the furniture, the setting, the airplane, whatever they happen to be in, is very largely imaginary. So cartoonists have to make it up pretty much out of their memory. And the two big problems are anatomy, which you have to memorize because it's not there to watch, and perspective and background work.
So what do you have on the drawing board now? You're away from home today. You're visiting Philadelphia.
Well, we have a tendency to go for the Monitor being an international paper, we tend to look at international issues as much or maybe more than we do the domestic issues. And although that's not always the case. So I've been doing things on the emerging story in China and the prisoners and who are being used in factories in China, and a situation that results from the breakup of the Soviet Union, numerous potential wars that we're going to have to deal with.
Well, thank you very much for talking with us.
Well, thank you very much.
Jeff Danziger is a syndicated political cartoonist and author of the new novel, Rising Like the Tucson. This is Fresh Air.